And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, when the Empire occupies Hera's home, she decides to personally recover a family heirloom. But a new Imperial commander named Blue Husbando, a.k.a. Grand Admiral Thrawn, is waiting. I meant to switch those, it's fine. There will be chiss hisses, Hera on a personal mission, and art! Lots of art! We're talking Hera's Heroes this week. How you doing, Chris?
That's a Chris hiss.
Chris hiss. almost as good as a chiss hiss.
Yeah.
Did you have a good week?
Yeah, so far so good. It's only Monday, so we'll see.
Yeah. I had a fun weekend. I saw a band Saturday night with my buddy Francine. We had a girls' night out, and it was my boss's cover band. It was fun because, like...
What kind of songs do they do?
Okay, so their name. Do you know those Punk Goes Pop CDs where it's, like, punk bands covering pop songs?
Uh-huh.
They're like that. Their name is Hell Pop. And their story is that they were a wedding band who was on the way to their wedding, and at a farmhouse they all got murdered. So now they're back from hell, and they're the wedding band from hell.
So they do all the wedding songs like punk rock style?
Kind of, yeah. They did it like...
Did they do the chicken dance?
No.
They need to do an evil chicken dance.
They did stuff like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. They did Britney Spears, but they also did like Hearts and some Michael Jackson. I've known Brad has been doing this for a while because he's always so excited
like
after
zombies
like
in like roughly tuxes.
One of them is. It's not as elaborate as you'd think it is. But like my boss has been telling me about this for a while, and like after like their singer, they like found her, and she is just like a diamond in the rough. Like they put out an ad on Craigslist, and she answered the ad, and like her family doesn't even know that she sings. Like her friends don't know that she's a singer, and so like she's just a diamond in the rough like kind of person, and like her voice is amazing. So like I knew the show was coming up. And, like, Brian was like, yeah, it's on Saturday. And finally on Thursday night, he was like, you know, I never tell my employees about my band. And I was like, oh, he wants me to go. Damn it. So I called up my buddy Francine, because we've been needing a girls' night out anyway and looking for, like, a way to get together. But, we're such old farts because they were supposed to go on at 10. And at 10:20, me and Chris, Francine were just like... Why aren't they on? We need to go to bed. But, like, they finally went on, and they were really, really good. We had a really, really good time. And Francine looked at me and was like, you know, when you told me that we were going to go see your boss's cover band, this was not what I expected. And she smiled at me and went, I had the best time. But it was just, like, a lot of fun. So I saw a show. I just don't like bar scenes. Like, just bar scenes are just... not my thing. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I hear you on that.
Yeah, when I get together with friends, I don't want to have to scream at them. You know, I want to sit down and like talk with them and catch up. Like, I've never understood bar scenes. It's just not my thing. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'll go to a bar to see a band. That makes sense. You know, if it's louder, there's a band going on. I'm paying attention to that. So.
Yeah, like, some of my old high school friends used to get together at this bar, like, every week. And I'm just like, can't we just, like, go have dinner and talk? Like, this is not... I don't want to, like, scream about my week at you. If I leave and my throat hurts, like, I don't want it. So, Yeah, and then I hung out a little bit with Billy on Sunday, and I'm going to go watch the Atlanta United playoffs at her house on Wednesday. So, yeah, it's a good week. Knock on wood that we win. But, yeah, that was my week. Worked. Did this.
Yeah, my week was pretty much working and doing podcasting.
Yeah.
Went to grocery shopping today.
Yeah. Sad. The high point of my day was one of my Thrawn friends, Stacy, sent me a Halloween card. So I got a little Halloween card from one of my Thrawn friends. So
yeah. I've been posting Halloween movies all month.
Halloween has like snuck up on me. And I know this episode is going to come out after Halloween. But like it snuck up on me. Like I still feel like I'm in August. it blows my mind that like it's about to be November. Like I'm still in August. Can we slow down a second?
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. It's gonna be December before you know it, but then it'll be Star Wars, so don't worry, it's not long before Star Wars happens.
I'm so excited.
More Star Wars. In a couple weeks there's gonna be some Mandalorian.
Because they confirmed that it's the ghost in the trailer. I'm so excited. I don't know who it could be. Hera. Hera could still be alive. It could be Jason. I think it'd be kind of cool if it was Jason Syndulla. Like I'm just like, yeah. Oh my god! But it would also be cool if it's Hera. How old is Vanessa?
There's been a million ships confirmed in that up to at this point now. You know, there's like ships from the video game. What was it? Dash Rendar's ships in there and.
And Vanessa Marshall is the right age for them to throw some green Twilight makeup on her and her actually play Hera. So.
There's a goddamn droid from the prequels. There's one of the, you know, the master droid ships, you know, the globe with the little, you know, halo around it.
Have we talked about the trailer yet on the show? I don't think we have.
I think
because it was coming out last week.
I think last week we were anticipate the trailer came out just after we got done recording. Like I think
you're
within
right.
an hour after.
Oh yeah,
because
I was like, I remember that because I was like, halftime's in 2 minutes. Bye.
Yeah. So.
Oh, do you want to talk about it right fast? Like a quick like we each give our 2 minute thoughts on the trailer.
Sure.
You go first.
I liked it visually. I split it into two parts visually. Visual beauty. There's some beauty shots in there. And there's some visual, like, just, like, murky. Not murky, but just, like, way too, you know, just swimming with visual, you know. It just doesn't have there's a lot of, like, sort of shapeless stuff in there. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, what's going on in it, I'm not gonna, like, I know how they cut these trailers, and there's whole parts of the movie they're leaving out, and they're changing the context of everything, so I'm not gonna get caught up in trying to figure out what's going on, because I know it's pretty much pointless, and they don't give you an awful lot to go on as far as that. I think the high point of the trailer for me was the music was phenomenal. Was
oh my
epic.
God, music is something that I get like swelling emotional music is makes me cry so easily, and like even as I was watching like trailer reactions, like I kept tearing up. Like music was so good.
The music was really good to it. I like, you know, that ship, the shot of all the ships there, it's that is like a warning. That's a little red flag for me. But the thing about it is
why
you know,
is it a red flag?
Because it's there's a little that shot, you know, okay, with the ghost in it, I was like, oh, that's cool. The ghost is in it. Look at all these ships. You have all different kinds of ships in there. So it's like, cool. But then when they were just like, you know, this ship is this ship. This is this guy's ship. And it's all been like confirmed. You know, and this ship is out of this ship. It seemed like it was like, okay, here's something that we can. It seemed like a little bit of a pandery ploy to me to be like, here's a shot of all the ships everybody's ever wanted to see again in a Star Wars movie, and here they all are. you know, whether they're going to figure into the battle more than you just see them flying by or anything, I doubt. But, you know, whatever. Those aren't the things. The only part of the thing, the whole trailer that got me engaged, like, with the content of it was, you know, C-3PO saying, you know, I'm taking a last look at all my friends. I'm just like, don't kill C. You can't kill. They can't kill C-3PO. They can't. I'm going to be pissed. They can wipe its memory.
See, I saw one theory that I thought that was very plausible was because they wiped his memory episode 3. Was it? End of episode 3 is when they... So I saw one theory that they're actually going back and they're accessing those older memories, which would erase everything that he's had since then, which I think could be an interesting theory.
You'd think they'd just be able to dump him into, you know, they dump the Lando robot into the Millennium Falcon. You'd think they'd be able to dump 3PO into some box and then put him back, you know, if they can load up his old memories, why not just load up his old memories and then add his new, you know, I don't know. So we don't know what's going on, but that was just like, you know, that had a little emotion into it because you don't want to see anything happen to C-3PO. And then you saw him with the red eyes. So he's probably maybe logging into something, you know, First Order or Imperial. It looks like there's Imperial stuff going on in here, too. So it's I'm worried about this movie being like an overcorrection of what people griping about the last movie. So they try to do something more like The Force Awakens, and they've got J.J. Abrams doing it too. So I hope it's not fan service. I mean, people are already talking about they saw a battle droid in the background where 3PO is. And it's they're like, oh, how are battle droids going to figure in? And it's like, it's probably this guy who's working on his head. That's probably his garage. So he's got a battle droid sitting in the, you know, found a battle droid somewhere and he tinkers around with it and stuff. It doesn't mean it's going to figure. It's probably just thrown in there so you can see a battle droid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to sound negative on it because I enjoyed it. But it just doesn't give an awful lot. The ice thing that all the TIE fighters are flying towards it. It looks like Palpatine's throne is in. Looks amazing. I love that. That's something new.
That's a Ralph McQuarrie drawing.
Yeah, I know his throne is. I didn't know the ice thing was. But
that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the throne.
Oh yeah. That's an old McQuarrie drawing, but that ice thing is. Yeah, we've seen stuff like that maybe in the comic books a little bit, but that's a totally new, it's very visually appealing to me. I like it.
Yeah.
I like that maybe, you know, Palpatine's last, you know, squadron of Empire people are living on this weird iceberg type thing. But I've gone past my 2 minutes.
You know, I was talking to Sean from Roll to Fail, who I need to get in touch with to see if he still wants to do Twin Sons with us. But I was talking to him about it, and he was like, yeah, I'm not really, they showed so much. And I thought about that, and I was like, if I put the three trailers together from the first teaser, the D23 footage, and this, I have no idea what the fuck this movie is about.
There's not an awful lot to it.
I have no earthly clue what the plot is going to be. I have no, it's just so bonkers. And so, like, and I haven't been trying to, like, think about it too much because I did so much speculation for, like, Last Jedi that, like, none of my theories came true. So I'm just, like, I kind of just want to go into this just, like, I want to enjoy the movie and then think about it.
The Last Jedi really didn't set it up for a lot of theorizing. You know, I don't know if they did that on purpose or not, but it left it. It was almost like the third movie.
But for me, like, I don't mind a little bit of fan pandering because it's going to be the last movie, like, and it's wrapping up like an entire series. Like, I would love to see like stuff from Clone Wars and the prequels come back. I would love to You know, everyone keeps talking about how, like, the possibilities of Anakin coming back. I want Padme and Shmi name-checked, because they are Skywalkers as well. But as for the actual trailer, let me stay with the trailer. Like, seeing, I had the feeling that I had when I found out that Saw Gerrera was going to be in Rogue One, when I realized that it was the ghost in the trailer. And because I was excited for Rogue One, but, like, learning that, like, animation was going to be tied into the movie, like, got me hyped for the movie. And, like, knowing, even if, and I know it's going to be cameos, because they're not going to bring in Hera and be like, this is Hera Syndulla, blah, 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 blah. It's all going to be cameos, but, like, this is the first time I'm hyped, knowing that they're, like, tying in this, like, animation stuff that I love. It's our podcast, it's our bread and butter. And, like, fucking space horses charging on a Star Destroyer. Like, I love bonkers shit like that in Star Wars. Does it make sense? No. Is it cool?
Well,
hell yes it is. Fucking horses on a Star Destroyer with BB-8 leading the fucking charge. Like,
it's totally out of context, but it, you know, so it might make total sense when we see it. I'm guessing.
Like, I was just thinking, like, I know, like, someone like Megan and Lauren, who are, like, so, just so logical about their Star Wars, like, they're gonna, like, pick that shit apart. But, like, to me, like, if it's cool, it's not Star Trek. You're not supposed to look at the logic of it. Like, hyperspace is not a real thing. There's no such thing as hyperspace, but fuck ever. Like fucking space horses on a Star Destroyer. Like, that was awesome. And I just, there's so many, like, little things. Like, my favorite shot was the shot of Finn Poe and Chewie. They turn that corner and they're running at the camera down the hallway shooting stormtroopers. That I love, like, long tracking shots like that. Like, it just looks so cool. And I'm just so hyped. Like, this was the first time I felt, like, hyped. Like, I was excited, but now I'm, like, hyped for the movie. And I agree, like, the music is just so good. Like, the music is what's got so much of it into me. And I can't even begin to know what this movie is even about. The only thing that I'm not super excited for, but I'm still reserving judgment because it really comes down to how it's done, is how they're going to handle the Ben Solo story. I'm actually not expecting Leia to be in this movie very much, which is sad because this was supposed to be Leia's movie. I just don't expect Leia to be in this video.
Yeah, no.
But, like, I'm still on the fence about how I feel about Kylo Ren. As of right now, I'm not a fan of his character. But it's interesting because, like, I'm not a Reylo, but I have a lot of friends who are Reylos. So, like, I enjoy listening to their discussions because I can see why they like the characters and stuff like that. And from a story point of view, Ben's probably going to get redeemed. Like, it's going to probably more than likely happen because in story context, like, it would be down if the final Skywalker film ended with the last Skywalker being bad, you know, like, that's not the story that they would probably want to end on. So, like, Ben Dimption's probably going to happen, but I'm still just waiting to see how, like, that's what it's, like, I'm nervous about how it's going to get handled.
I hope not.
I hope he doesn't die, because, like, the more and more I think about it, I have issues with Vader's death. Like, I have issues with Anakin being redeemed and then not having to deal with any of the bullshit. Like, I actually would love, this is my ideal Ben Dimption. I would love to have Ben Dimption happen in the first act and then have the rest of the movie handling the fallout, to where it's like, I could see someone like, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine, like, I could see different points of different people handling it differently. Like, I could see Rey and Leia forgiving him. I don't see Poe forgiving him, because he tortured Poe. Poe has no reason to forgive him. So I would like that dichotomy where, like, he's not just magically good and everyone's okay with it. I would love to him to get redeemed, like, in the first act, and then have it be, like, split the whole way through. And because that would actually be really good drama if, like, he was trying to help them, but, like, Poe is like, I don't want to fucking work with this guy. He tortured me.
It's a lot of drama to stick in a tying everything up thing. That's the thing, is his redemption is going to take a lot of work, and they got one movie to do it.
I know. So like
they got 2 hours to do it. So
almost 3. It's the longest Star Wars movie. I think it's 2 hours 55 minutes.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah. But so like that's my ideal. So like that's the only thing I'm kind of still on the fence about is how they're gonna handle Ben Demption, because I'm not a fan of the Kylo Ren character. But I'm still withholding judgment because I don't have the whole story yet. I don't, you know, they could do whatever they do in the third movie.
They're still working on this movie. So half the stuff we saw in the trailer could not be shots in the movie, you know?
Also, like, you know, we never know. Like, nobody knew that Vader was Luke's father when the second movie came out, episode 5. And, like, it changed everything in the first movie. And that's how I kind of feel. Like, I'm waiting to hold this total judgment because I don't have the whole Kylo Ren story. So, like, they could do something here that, like, when I go back and watch Force Awakens and Last Jedi, it could be, like, it could reflect back on those. So, like, I don't want to judge it until I have the whole story. So, but I loved the trailer. I thought it was awesome. We should
it's coming up.
We should get started on Hera's Heroes, though. Did you like Hera's Heroes?
I did.
You still don't like Thrawn, do you?
No, I have some notes on Thrawn.
I have a long note you can't see because it's a link. So.
Ooh.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Hera's Heroes is the 42nd episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on October 5th, 2016. It was written by Nicole Dubuck, I hope that's how you say your name, and directed by Mel Zweier. Some extra information for you. I'm so sorry. I am so about to butcher your name. I'm sorry. Captain
Sogliuzzo?
Sogliuzzo?
Yeah, that's what I would guess.
Sogliuzzo. Captain Slavin is voiced by Andre Sogliuzzo. I'm sorry. I'm trying. His other works include voicing the clones in the Tartakovsky's Clone Wars, the Transformers television series, Avatar The Last Airbender, and The Polar Express. Kalachori is a word that first appeared in the 2011 Star Wars Legends video game, Star Wars The Old Republic, as a Kalachori village, a twilight settlement on the planet Tython. According to the in-game codex, the village was named after an old twilight word for beginning. This episode marks the series debut of the Imperial Scout Troopers known as Biker Scouts. The Syndulla residence has a central channel of water running through it, a sign of their prosperity in a desert environment. And the Rebels Recon had a lot of stuff in it, so here we go. In Rebels Recon for this episode, Vanessa Marshall talked about playing Hera in this episode and brought up the phrase, "The person you should fear most is someone you have nothing to lose." She says she kept that phrase in mind because Hera lost so much during the Clone Wars that she doesn't have anything else to lose by joining the Rebellion. In this episode, we got to see that she had lost her mother. The rest of the crew, like Dave Filoni and Pablo Hidalgo, talked about Hera's early life and the challenges of her father being a military and a political leader. They flat out call her the daughter of a politician, which, yeah, Hera is the daughter of a politician, and I never really thought about it in that context before. Her childhood home is pretty much the equivalent of the mayor's mansion. They also talked about the Kalachori was inspired by the idea of a heritage quilt. They also really wanted to emphasize that the Kalachori was important to her mother, since they had already focused so much on Hera's father. They also talk about Hera having the option to customize Kalachori in future... They also talked about Hera having the option to customize the Kalachori in the future of the series. And I cried when I realized this, because that's hinting at Kanan's death later in the show, and they hinted at it this early on, and I didn't realize it until just fucking now. So I was, like, upset. I was like, they told us in Hera's Heroes that someone was going to die. In regards to Thrawn, they talked about how the Rebels had no idea what they're up against. Thrawn isn't well-known with the Rebellion because any Rebel troops that he ran into up to this point, mostly like Knights One's group, he's wiped them out. They also talked about how Thrawn sees victories by gaining information that he didn't have before. Our heroes aren't used to this because the Rebels think they're winning, but they don't realize they're feeding Thrawn's bigger picture. They're informing Thrawn about themselves. Dave Filoni also talked about setting up Thrawn and Hera as adversaries for the rest of the series. The fact that they're here in Hera's house, he learned a lot about her. Dave says his favorite scene in the episode was when Thrawn was talking about Hera in front of the painting and being like, you were forged in war and you grew up in it, blah, blah, blah. And the Hera was like, ah, fuck you. They also talked about the happy coincidence of Sabine being an artist while they were creating the series. And here is Thrawn, who studies art since his Legends conception. Sabine has been leaving clues and calling cards since episode one, which now Thrawn can study and plan for. You know who also likes to study art?
Much studying and planning Yoda does.
That segue is the hardest to do. Cause I'm just
always
like,
planning.
Sometimes that segue is really easy, and sometimes I'm like, I got nothing.
Sometimes Yoda is very easy, and sometimes Yoda's got nothing.
Sometimes Yoda's very subtle, and sometimes it's very awkward. How you doing, Yoda? You having a goofy?
Not bad, not bad.
You do anything fun?
Always do things fun, yes. Yes.
What'd you do?
Yoda's making a quilt. Out of moss. All of Yoda's adventures he's putting on the quilt.
Are you, like, felting the quilt, too, so you can be, like, a little monster?
Little pictures.
Sorry, guys. Chris and I were talking about felting before we started recording, so that's why.
You know who's not on Yoda's quilt?
Yaddle.
Yaddle. Correct.
I just imagine you, like, putting Yaddle on your quilt and then just burning a hole into it.
Yoda uses that part of the quilt to wipe his mouth.
I thought you were going to say your ass. You're going to wipe your ass with that part of the quilt.
Good idea. Yes.
Well, you weren't ready for your question, Yoda?
Oh, a question for Yoda. Yes, yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, this question is for me. The time that we're recording this, it is Halloween week. And by the time this episode comes out, it'll be almost Thanksgiving. So, since it's the holiday season, I just was wondering, what's your favorite holiday and why?
Life Day, Yoda guesses, is that's the only holiday in space.
I thought you were going to say something like Valentine's Day. I figured you were going to go for Life Day.
Yeah, there's Naked Yoda Week, but that's Yoda's own holiday. Good holiday.
Does it come during the hottest part of the Dagobah summer?
Oh, it is hottest part, yes.
I just imagine you, like, making a little moss, like, moss underwear, and that's all you wear.
No underwear. Not allowed. Oh, you lose. Yes. Always naked on Naked Yoda Week.
How do you lose a holiday? I lost Christmas. Cool.
Yeah.
Naked Yoda Week.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it's definitely not yet Naked Yoda Week this week. I guess we'll find out. Sometime.
He just, like, dropped right out of there. Bye. Well, you ready for Act 1?
I am.
Act 1 was weirdly short. By the time we got to the first green wipe, I was just like, oh, we're, like, 10 minutes into this.
This episode went by kind of fast.
Yeah. I wasn't quite sure where to split the act between Act 1 and Act 2, because the first green wipe came at, like, 10 minutes in, and usually there's, like, 7, 7, and 7. So I just kind of, I split it when they got to Hera's house, so. All right, Act 1?
Act 1.
We open on the plains of Ryloth, where Hera's daddy, Sham, and my baby girl now kick-ass woman, Numa, are riding away from some Imperials on some blurgs. Those little, like, dino things they're riding are called blurgs. And, like, they had them in the Clone Wars, and I was like, oh, yeah, they are called blurgs. I forgot about that. So I just like saying blurgs. Blurgs is a fun word to say. Apparently, the Empire is suddenly getting really good at figuring out where they're going to be. It's almost like there's a hot new blue guy around who suddenly took a lot of interest in Ryloth because Hera's family is there. The Speederbike Scouts are gaining on the Blurgs, and our heroes are in need of a pickup. They're also running right for a cliff. Luckily, Hera is there and swoops in to shoot down part of the Empire. She lowers the ramp, scoops up Sham, Numa, and Blurgs and all, including one poor lone Speederbike trooper. And Zeb is there waiting for the trooper and goes, "Hey, that's a mighty nice helmet. Hey, Ezra, you collect these things, right?" And Ezra's like, ooh, a new one, a shiny new one. And Zeb punches out the poor trooper, and our heroes are safe once again. I kind of really wish there was a shot of them, like, kind of lowering down and just, like, throwing him off the ship and driving away. That would have been great. They gather together, and Sham informs Hera that the Empire now occupies the entire Tan province, which is Hera's childhood home. The Imperial guy, Captain Slavin, used to really suck at his job. But lately, it's like he suddenly got some help from someone much hotter and smarter than him. Sham says that he wasn't able to save anything, not even their Kalikori, which is an heirloom, and it was super, super important to Hera's mother. Hera wants to get the Kalikori, and everyone from her old family to her new family volunteers to help her get it. Hera doesn't want to risk their lives, but Kanan's like, "Hey, honey, you're our space mom, my space wife. You would help us out, because we're the space family, and we are the healthiest portrayal of family love in Star Wars." And they make a plan. Hera, Chopper, and Ezra, who is now wearing the Speederbike trooper uniform, will sneak in while everyone else causes a diversion to pull the troops away. Go team, save family, Art! They start the attack on the Imperial Patrol. They got bombs going off, there's Blurgs running wild, and Kanan pulls his lightsaber to be out to be awesome and to have a very distracting, "Look at me, I got a lightsaber!" kind of thing. While everybody was distracted, Ezra and Hera wait for the patrol to chase after their friends, and then they sneak on past everybody. They pull up to Hera's home, which Ezra finds really pretty, and they start their own infiltration. What'd you think of Act 3? I'm tired.
It's Act 1. Hope we're not at Act 3 yet. Yeah, don't get that far ahead of yourself. We're not over yet. We're just starting, Hope.
Ooh. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it. It was just basically an action sequence, so I have really just sort of like visual notes.
Yeah, I don't really have anything either.
Is it Gobi? Is it Cham's sidekick, Gobi? I like that he's kind of like, not fat, but he's a little bit of a little chunky Twi'lek.
He was a lot more fit in the Clone Wars, because like when they were like, Gobi was in these episodes of the Clone Wars, like I pulled up a couple scenes, he was a lot younger in the Clone Wars and a little bit more fat. Fit.
You just usually don't see a chunky, you know, Twi'lek, so that's cool.
Unless it's like the senator guy who's just
that
like,
was humongous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That it looks like ridiculously distorted. But it's cool that I always like the troop transports, and there's just a lot of nice little details I like the visual look of the Blurgs, but there's just like there's one shot with Hera's where Hera's just when her head tilts, you can see the reflection off her goggles, and you can see that they're made out of like thin plastic. You know what I mean? They look like some real, like sometimes you'll have the goggles and they'll have the plastic in them that's gotten bent a little bit, but when it bends in a straight, you know, in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So when the light hits it, you can see how that it's not very thick and just sort of like plasticky. And it's just little details like that that are great, you know, that add that realism that you don't usually notice. But this time I just noticed that and I was just like, that's just like great little detail that you wouldn't have to do. You could just have done the light shining off them, you know. So it was really cool. That's all I really got for this part.
It suddenly hit me for the first time. Why Thrawn is...
They should have stripped the Stormtrooper and thrown him on the Blurgs and then seen the Blurgs walking off with the Stormtrooper, like, tied up on their back.
Yeah, I was actually kind of like, I was like, what did they do with the guy's body? And I kind of wish there was, like, a little scene of, like once they're out in the wild, they fly low and they drop the thing. And they, like, just toss him out, and like he's just in his underwear, and he just like lands on the ground, just like, ow.
I think Chopper was like, "I'll take care of him. I'll toss him out." And then Chopper just like locked him in his secret Chopper basement room and has been torturing him ever since.
Oh, poor guy.
Torture. I don't know how far it is for Chopper to go before he goes from murder droid to Chopper to torture droid.
Murder droid to like serial killer droid.
Right, to Dexter droid.
But yeah, I don't have a lot of notes either. So though it did hit me this episode, I never realized it before. And I don't know how I missed this, but like, I realized, like, why Thrawn is on Ryloth, and then later on he's on Mandalore, which I used to think, I was like, well, that's kind of weird. Like, Mandalore's nowhere close to Ryloth, like, or close to Lothal. Like, why is he here? And then it just, like, suddenly hit me like a ton of bricks. He's here because he's after the Lothal rebels. He's here to find information on Hera, and he goes later to Mandalore to, like, find information on Sabine. And, like, yeah, while he's on Mandalore, he's like, oh, cool, I can, like, get some weapons. That's fine. But, like, it never, like, struck me until this viewing. And I've seen this episode. This is one of my favorite episodes of Rebels. So I've watched this episode, like, more than I've watched some of the other ones. And, like, it never hit me until, like, now. I was like, he's here because he's trying to fight the Lothal Rebels. And Hera's one of them. He's helping take over because he wants to learn about her. And then I felt like a fucking idiot because I never realized it until, like, yesterday. I felt so dumb. But it makes sense why he's here, because he's looking for information and he gets everything he needs. And that's why he's on Mandalore later, because he's like not only getting weapons, he's also like looking into Sabine. And it makes so much sense now, you know, 7 viewings later. I just love the little story details they just continue throughout the show. Like, Ezra collects stormtrooper helmets, and I like that scene where Zeb's just like, hey Ezra, do you have this one? He's like, nope. And he's like, the kid wants your helmet, which is a nice callback to Fight or Flight from season 1, where Zeb is like, hey kid, do you want this helmet? And he's like, oh, I already have that one. And then he realized he heard Zeb's feeling. He's like, but this is a new one, I want this one. Like, so it's a nice continuation from season 1. I just like when they carry those like little story details, like, we're going to get another Commander Mailu run later on. And I just like those little details that they just bring back, because they're nice. They world build and they show that these characters have history. So.
Yeah, no, Mailu runs were mentioned in this episode, too.
Was it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I should say I'd sneak down to the kitchen to grab a Mailu run every once in a while.
So I love stuff like that. It's just a funny little scene, too. Like, that poor stormtrooper, he was just like, what? What do you mean? Oh, God. And then Zeb and Chopper killed him.
Murdered him.
And my only last on the note, like, they've been doing a lot of sunsets the last several episodes. Like, there was one on Mystery of Chopper Base. There was one, Mystery of Chopper Base. There is one in Twilight of the Apprentice. There was one in Shroud of Darkness. Now we have this sunset. Like, they've been doing a lot of sunsets. So I always think they're so pretty, and I love that Hera's house is built into a mountain. I think it's just a cool looking place. It's kind of funny because I was like, where actually is her house? And at the end of the episode, like, you see like then just the very top peak explode. But it makes me wonder, like, is that entirely like a city, and her house is just at the top of it? But it's just a really cool design, and I like it.
Yeah, but I like it. They don't explain it completely, but you get enough of it to get the gist of it.
I like how respectful Ezra is of it. Like, when they first pull up, and he's like, wow, that's your home? And she's like, yeah. And he looks back and just says very serious, like, this is really beautiful. It's a nice little moment with them, too.
Yeah, I don't even know if he was being respectful. He was respectful, but he was like, I think he was just genuinely like, whoa, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Just like I was when I was looking at it going, well, that would be a cool place to live.
And, you know, like, Hera's been spending all this time trying to help Ezra save his home. Ever since season 1, like, they've been trying to get the Empire off Lothal because that's Ezra's home and it's important to them. So I think there's also like a little bit of this episode where Ezra's just more than happy to try and help Hera get her home back, because she's done so much for everybody. So I think I have a note about that in at some point.
Plus, when you have friends and, like, family friends, you want to learn about their past and where they come from and stuff like that. So it's always, you're learning something new about someone you know.
And she's the space mom. And, like, we were talking about that, I think, in the season two roundup, about how Hera doesn't get all these transformative episodes because she's just solid the whole way through. So, like, even though Hera doesn't go through any big transformations, this episode's cool because, like, you get to see where she grew up. Like, you see these hallways. Yeah, it fills in the gaps
a little.
Yeah, like, you can just imagine, like, Hera, like, tiny little child Hera, like, sneaking down into the kitchen, you know? So it's nice character shading for a character that doesn't have a lot of big transformations. So it's all just really nicely done. But that's all I have for Act 1.
All right, so Act 2, not Act 3?
Shut up.
We'll do Act 3 after this one.
Act 6? Act 4? Wait, this is not an hour-long episode. Act 2. Ezra... You made me laugh. Shut up. Ezra and Hera get inside the house mansion thing, and Chopper is waiting for them in the yard, painted to look like an Imperial droid, but Chopper is lingering by a Y-wing out front, and it was the ship that he crashed in during the Clone Wars, and he's all sad. And they leave him to meet up with later and head inside Hera's house, which is just crawling with Imperials. They're able to sneak down to Sham's old office, and Hera looks for the Kallikori. And Ezra sees a painting of Sham, Hera's mother, who we still don't know the name of, which is ridiculous, and baby Hera looking adorable. And Ezra's just like, Hera, look at your little baby face! And Hera's like, excuse you, I am still adorable. And she finds the Kallikori, and Ezra's like, wow, that was super easy. And Hera's like, knock on wood, don't jinx us, kid. We still gotta get out of here. They head back out the main hallway and try to sneak out. But just as they're about to get out, the door slides open. And it's my blue husbando. Thrawn is there with Captain Slavin. And Slavin is a fuckwit and a half. And Slavin's all like, pop, pop, splash, splash. I wrote in the note, make British sounds, and that's what I came up with. British sounds!
Oi, Governor!
Thrawn, I don't know why you're here. I got this under control. And Thrawn hears Ezra and Hera slip out of the room, and he's like, oh, do you? Do you really think you're in control? I'm gonna teach you something today, Slavin. And in the elevator, Ezra is like, who is that blue guy? I didn't know the Empire hired aliens. Everything is different now. That blue guy is so handsome. How are we going to get out of this now? And Hera says there's a secret exit on the lower levels, which the Empire has already found. They're pretty much trapped inside her house. But at least they've found Chopper. Back with our other heroes, like Kanan and Sham, they're still being chased by a patrol. Kanan and Sabine get blown off a Borg, and Sham sees that and goes, damn it, I guess I'll save my daughter's husband because I want to try and be a good father-in-law. And they whip out some rocket launchers and blow up a part of the cannon, but that will only hold off the Empire for so long. Without hearing from Hera, they have no choice but to keep moving. Back with the other team, Ezra and Hera find a door with fewer guards. Chopper rolls out, and it's time for the Chopper Show! He's talking to the guards, he's waving his arms, he's spinning around, and the guards are like, what the fuck is wrong with this droid? And as the guards are distracted, Hera heads for the door. But it opens, and there's Slavin and Blue Husbando there to meet her. And Slavin's like, ew, it's one of those things! Stop breathing my air, peasants! And Hera puts on her best servant face and tries to scuttle away. But Thrawn has done his research, and he's like, hey, Twi'lek lady, why don't you show me what you're holding there? And he takes the Kallikori from her. Meanwhile, Ezra is just sliding slowly in there with the other guards. And Thrawn's like, so what do you think about my occupation? And Hera's like, I no speak basic. And Thrawn has Hera taken to Slavin's office for questioning, with Ezra leading her. Meanwhile, Chopper's still free, so there's still a good thing happening. They take her to Slavin's office, where she's playing the poor starving person, and she thought she could sell the Calicroyer for food. And Slavin is like, insert some more British noises here. You're just some dumb alien, and I'll make you an example out of you. And Thrawn is like, oh my god, Slavin, please stop talking. You're making the rest of us Imperials look bad. She's incredibly valuable. Do you know what this is? And he holds up the Calicroyer, and then he chisplains the Calicroyer to Slavin. Me and Megan, instead of mansplains, we came up with chisplains, which is like every time Thrawn talks. He chisplains the Calicroyer to Slavin. And Slavin still doesn't get it. And Thrawn is like, oh my god, Slavin! This is Hera Syndulla. She's the daughter of Sham Syndulla. Jeezy crazy, I'm Miss Eli Vanto, because you guys are all just so stupid. And Hera's like, fuck off, blue guy! That's my Calicroyer! And Thrawn's like, haha, gotcha! And he shoots Ezra. But he doesn't actually, like, shoot Ezra. He stuns Ezra. I should actually say that he stuns Ezra, not shoots Ezra. He doesn't kill him. And the whole time, Slavin's like, what just happened? What do you think of Act 2? I'm having so much fun that Thrawn's here now. I'm having so much fun. What do you think of Act 2, Chris? This is actually where almost all of my notes are.
Here we go. Thrawn, trapping them once again with our his thing. So
I guess we should
we're going good with the Thrawn here. So I have no notes on Thrawn yet. Not till
we should preference if people are just joining us for Rebels, but they didn't get to like our in between Clone Wars and Rebels episode. Chris is not a fan of Thrawn. I am, so this should be fun. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, he's bearable to me, but I don't think he's a very well-crafted character. But so far, okay, this makes sense. Okay, this is the Thrawn as presented. He's known that she would come back for her family art, and he got lucky in the timing of him being in there when she was in there. She almost got away with it, but, you know, for story's sake, we'll let it go. But my only other note with this is I was getting very frustrated with the whole secondary battle with the walker, because I felt with that kind of walker, and especially what we saw Kanan do back in when they first met up with Rex and Relics of the Old Republic, those two episodes when he took out the scout walker.
Yeah.
That would have been the first, like, tactically, if I were a Jedi, I would have done a Jedi run in there and taken out that walker's legs first thing, because that's
the only
thing. Well,
you have to keep in mind, they're posing it as a distraction, like, so they're trying to draw them out as long as they can, and they're waiting to hear from Hera, so right. Until they hear from Hera, like, they're supposed to be leading the troops away, so.
Yeah, but they could just wipe them out. It was basically, they were taking them out, and at one point, it's basically like they take that walker out and then the trooper out. And then it's like, why, who cares if they're distracted or not? They're done, you know, and you're not sitting there getting shot at or whatever. So I was just getting a little frustrated, like, yeah, you could, you know, because they distracted them enough to get Ezra and Hera off. And that's really all they needed to distract them for. They could have taken them out, you know, and it would have had the same general effect. But that's just a minor quibble. I was just like, come on, take out that walker. You can take it out. You can do it. That's all I got for part two.
That's okay. I have all the notes.
You got all the notes. Yeah.
Let me take a sip of my drink. I'm going to get my first note out of the way because it's very short. I love how dumb Slavin is. Slavin's so stupid and I love him. He's so stupid.
Well, basically that's how it goes with Imperials, is that unless you're like one of the elite, like great characters, you're an idiot, you know. Same with the First Order.
I forgot where I wrote it. Maybe I did write it in Act 2. I forgot where I wrote it, but I wrote it somewhere in here. Like, the Imperials are extra British-y this season. Like, do you remember the guy who was, like, the instructor in the Wedge Antilles episode? And he was just like,
yeah, oh my god, my students, no.
Yeah, it's Governor Price. Like, they're super British-y this season. And Slavin just adds to that. Like, he's just so British-y. But I love Slavin. Like, he's so stupid. And I love him. I love Slavin so much. All right, that's my minorest of notes. I love how dumb Slavin is. My next note. I love quiet Chopper moments. I love, like, because, like, Chopper is so often, like, the sociopathic murder butt. And it's just so interesting to have.
How do you know his old the guy he was flying for wasn't an asshole, and Chopper's not sitting there going, "I told you you shouldn't have fucked with me, man. I told you you shouldn't have fucked with me. Why'd you make me do it?
Because we also saw in the season opener, like, he didn't want to get back in a Y-wing, and, like, Zeb had to force him into a Y-wing. So I just like this, like, when we get these kind of deeper Chopper moments, they're just so nice because it's so different from what we're used to with the character.
You'd think it would be so easy to fix droid trauma. You'd think they could go in and just sort of, like, smooth out the trauma algorithm a little bit for Chopper, you know?
I'm sure there's, like, a whole long, like, essay written somewhere about, like, the sentience of droids in Star Wars, but I will never read it because that's the AI bullshit that I thought of in my life.
Hope's not going to see the new Terminator movie.
Hell, I've never seen any of the Terminator
movies. I believe you.
Oh, no, I've never seen them. I actually, I've been listening to this podcast called, what's it called? You Must Remember This, and I'm listening to, like, the history of Humphrey Bogart, and, like, they're talking about Casablanca, and it hit me that I've never seen Casablanca.
It's a good movie. It's very short.
Yeah,
it's like an hour and 10 minutes long or something like that. So
the new Mandalorian trailer dropped. Yay, I'll watch. All right,
we got something to do after the show, talk about next week.
I know. So, but yeah, I just love quiet Chopper moments. I'm tired of dead moms in Star Wars. Also, why didn't they name Hera's mom? Like, why can't moms have names, and why are all the moms dead?
I know, it was all but just her picture X'd out on the family portrait.
I know, and, like, why doesn't she... We still, to this day, don't know the name of Hera's mom.
Mrs. Syndulla.
Her first name.
Mrs. Cham Syndulla.
Fuck you. Fuck off, Chris. No, but, like, it's just an ongoing thing. And, like, Rebels started changing that a little bit. Like, to me, like, Hera is the best space mom in all of Star Wars. Like, she's the best mom. But, like, you know, like, we got, like, Sabine's mom later on. So we started, like, they're starting to change this narrative of, like, having more moms in Star Wars.
But there's,
like,
still a small playing field.
Yeah,
there's,
like,
Mom of the Hutt.
Like, Padme never got to mom. We never saw Beru raise Leia except for in books, but we've never seen it on screen. Aunt Beru, we never got to see her more than, like, one scene with Luke. I mean, like, where are all the fucking moms in Star Wars? We don't know, like, we know what Leia's relationship was, but we only saw it in books. We don't know what it's really like on screen because we only seen, like, little snippets of her and Kylo. Like, I'm tired of dead moms. I'm tired of the lack of moms. Give us Hera's mom's name, damn it. So, my next note is, I like the Hera and Ezra team up. The last time they were together, I had to actually think about it. It was way back in season one when they were saving that senator guy. I think his name was Gal Travis, I think was his name. And, like, remember, like, they were in the pipes in the undergrounds of Lothal, and there was, like, big fans in the background. And then the senator was like, ha ha, I'm working with the Empire. And Hera's like, I gave you my blaster. And the guy tries to shoot him, but, like, she gave him an empty blaster, like that scene. But I was thinking about it. And this time is much more different than that last episode where they teamed up together, because Ezra is much more mature. Like, he's much older, and he's mature, and he's more calm now. And I like the difference between that episode, because, like, he was freaking out in that episode, and pretty much Hera was in charge of the season one episode with him and Gal Travis. But in this one, like, you can tell that Hera is relying on Ezra. Like, he has experiences this time around, and she's not having to coach him that as much as she had to in season one. So it's just a really nice, like, way to show how far Ezra has come since season one, now that they're teamed up for the second time. So I like that story progression and the character progression in Ezra. I love seeing Thrawn's influence occupying Hera's home. Because I started thinking about it, and in the first two seasons, the Rebels relied on the Empire not knowing much about the locals. Like, they didn't know where secret passages were, they didn't know the sewer systems, they didn't know the land. But now, what I like about it is we're seeing how much more difficult it is for the Rebels to work. Like, the patrol keeps finding Sham and Kanan's group. Hera assumes that the Empire doesn't know anything about the lower levels, but they do. And it's never fully stated, like, oh, because Thrawn's here and upping all the security and stuff like that, everything's harder now. But it's just active storytelling where Hera's like, surely they're not going to be downstairs. Fuck, they're downstairs. Surely they're not going to be here. Fuck, they're here. And so I like the story, the showing storytelling, because not only does it show that the stakes are higher now, but, like, because Thrawn has been planning this, it shows that the Empire is getting, like, a boost from him being there as well. And things are harder now. It's not as easy for them as it was in season one and two.
Yeah, the Empire's putting resources towards finding and destroying them.
Yeah, because I was just thinking of, like, I think
it better was, resources, too.
I actually think it was
more and better.
I think it was actually the episode with Gull Travis. I was thinking about this. Like, they go down the sewers, and I think Kallus and Tuor were there, and they were like, does anybody know the sewers? And they were like, no. And, like, and then, like, after that episode, they sealed all the sewers because the Rebels couldn't use them, but they learned after the Rebels had used it. Thrawn's ahead of the game here. Like, he's already set up all the exits. Like, they're all, like, covered. So I really love seeing his influence in this episode. Okay, so my favorite scene of the entire episode is the whole scene where they're in Slavin's office and, like, Thrawn is just explaining the Kalachori to everybody. And there's just so many things in, like, that scene that just makes it so good. First and foremost, I love Slavin realizing how bad at life he is. I love how dumb Slavin is. There's a lot of really great animation with Hera, where, like, she's acting, like, all servancy, but, like, once Thrawn passes her shoulder, she, like, kind of turns her head and turns her eyes towards him, like she's trying to figure him out, so there's really nice information there. You have that moment when she realizes that Thrawn knows who she is. She switches from, like, servant to rebel leader, and she, like, finally comes back to her own there. She's horrified to, like, know that Thrawn knows what the Kalachori is. The music is so good because I love Thrawn's theme being, like, this organ music. It's just, I love that scene. There's so many little things in that scene that are just so good. It's my favorite scene of the episode. Anything?
Yeah, I like it. It was okay.
I know, it's not your jam. It's my jam. It jimmied all the jams. It jimmied all the uterus jams.
It wasn't jimmying me yet, but I get unjimmied by the third act.
All right. And to kind of carry on about that, when we did Steps in the Shadow, I was talking about how I didn't think it was a good season opener for Thrawn. I don't think it was a good introduction. I like Hera's Heroes because to me, like, this is a good introduction to Thrawn. And I wish Steps in the Shadows had a little bit more of this. This entire episode shows why Thrawn is such a good villain, even though Chris disagrees with me. I wrote it into my notes for you. I acknowledge it. It sets up his love of art. Nothing is easy from the Rebels at any point in this episode. And there's a real threat here that Ezra and Hera might not make it out. And so this is kind of what I wish that Steps in the Shadow had a little bit more of. And, you know, that was a jam-packed episode. But, like, just, like, a little bit more of this. One thing I do love about season 3 and season 4 is the Hera versus Thrawn story. Because if Grande was Kanan's nemesis for season 1, and then that came back full circle again in season 2, Thrawn is set up starting now to be Hera's nemesis for the rest of the show. And I love their dynamic and how they're constantly at battle with each other and they're constantly trying to outsmart each other. I actually read a great Tumblr post forever ago. And it was Thrawn speaking, and Thrawn was going, battling against Hera Syndulla is like playing a great adversary in chess. Battling against the rest of her crew is like playing checkers with a 5-year-old, and they keep changing all the rules. But, like, I love the Hera versus Thrawn dynamic for the rest of the show. It's just so good. It's actually one of my favorite parts of Rebels that I'm really excited to revisit again. And then my last note I had was, also, no wonder Thrawn figured out Ezra was a rebel. He's the only guy running around in a speeder bike outfit. Everybody else is stormtroopers.
Other people might even saw that and noted it and been just like, yeah, whatever. But Thrawn, yeah, he got that from the second he saw it. He probably got it, like, just from Ezra's body language, too.
You know, it was very interesting. I went back and I rewatched Star... Because Star Wars Explained used to do weekly recaps. No, weekly reviews of Rebels when they were running. And he pointed out something very good, a very good point that I didn't realize. At no point does Thrawn ever see Chopper. Which is probably would have been the first dead giveaway that something was off to him, because Thrawn would take one look at Chopper and be like, that's not one of ours. And I was like, that's a very valid point, that at no point does Thrawn ever see Chopper, which is probably in the Rebels' favor, because that would have been the first thing.
It's probably good for Thrawn, because Chopper would just, light into him.
That's how Thrawn died. Chopper pushed him off the side of Hera's mountain.
He took out Jesse Ventura, man. Thrawn's...
But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for the real Act 3.
The real Act 3. Thank you. Act 3. Hera is forced to drag Ezra's body into a closet where they're going to be kept as prisoners. Thrawn welcomes Hera and is happy to meet her. And he says that he'll keep her Kallikori in a place of honor. Hera says she would have smashed it rather than give it to Thrawn. And Thrawn is like... Well, apparently, I care more about your art than you do. And Hera's like, look here, you colonizing bastard! Our history and art is for us alone! A collector would never fully understand it! And then Slavin says some words, and Thrawn literally lifts his hand like, please stop talking, Slavin. And as they're leaving, Slavin says that he should just destroy the Kallikori, and he calls it trash. And my husbando? Grabs Slavin, hisses at him, and then he lets him go and goes, oh dear me, I almost ripped your fucking head off. My bad. Please shut up and follow my orders. And then Slavin has a look of like, did I almost get murdered for bad mouthing art? The answer is yes, Slavin, you almost did. Meanwhile, Kanan and Shamma groups isn't faring that great, but suddenly the Imperials stop fighting and they project a message from Slavin. He has Hera and wants to trade her and Ezra for Sham. Sham agrees to the exchange and will meet them at sunrise. I realize I wrote sundown, but sunrise. Well, it's a clear trap, but Sham is relying on the rest of the rebels to save Hera and Ezra for him. Back with Hera and Ezra, who is now awake from being stunned. Hera is upset that everything went so badly. She hates that Ezra and everyone else was in danger because she was in danger, and she calls herself selfish for wanting to get the Kallikori. But Ezra points out that Hera is always putting everyone else first, so they wanted to help her. Luckily, Chopper breaks in and lets them know that Sham is giving himself up, which gives Hera an idea. She gives Chopper the okay to get as many explosives that he can get, which just pleases the murder bot to no end. And Ezra is shocked, realizing that Hera's going to blow up her childhood home. But Hera says that her home is with her crew and her family. They send Chopper on his way, and he laughs evilly when he finds a box full of grenades. At sunrise, Thrawn is on his ship with the Kallikori, watching the prisoner exchange from afar. He wants to see how Hera will respond to all of this. And we see the ghost fly in towards Hera's house. The back door opens, and Sham and Kanan come out of the back. Slavin is super British evil. Oh, here's where I wrote the Imperials are extra British this season. And he wants to exchange Sham for Hera and Ezra. And as they start walking to the exchange prisoners, Chopper rolls out the front door, cackling like a madman. Hera meets in the center with Sham and goes, hey, Dad! Remember when I was a teenager and I crashed my first car? What's about to happen is so much worse. And Chopper hits the button and the house explodes. And in the chaos, they all run back onto the ghost. And blind Kanan Force throws a fucking rocket launcher into a walker because Kanan Jarrus is awesome. And Sabine is driving the ghost and they fly away from Thrawn's ship. And Blue Husbando lets them go, having learned a lot about the rebels today. And Slavin calls him to Thrawn like, "What the fuck, man?" And Thrawn is like, "Shouldn't have called my new art piece trash, you bitch." And back on the ghost, Kanan apologizes that they weren't able to get the Kalachori, but Hera says that she doesn't need it, as long as she has her space family.
Aww.
Okay, let me hear what you hate about Thrawn. Go.
I'll get to that. I got two shallow notes. One, now Chopper's a pyromaniac.
He's always been a pyromaniac.
He's just looking at those bombs going, yeah, yeah, yeah. The shot of the ghost going from the desert to the dusk blue sky is really nice. From the total orange dark desert to the sky, it's just nice. Nice color change. Okay, first, before I start out on Thrawn, I'll say one good thing about him is I like that you don't talk shit about art in front of Thrawn. Not a good idea.
I think, you know, Slavin's life passed before his eyes in that one moment. He was like, "I'm about to get murdered."
But other than that, this is just typical of the Thrawn that I know and I'm just sort of like meh towards, you know. I'm a super genius, and the beginning part of his plan works, and then at the end when it doesn't work, he just goes, "Oh, well, it's fine. I learned a lot."
Well, the whole thing is he's trying to find the whole rebel fleet, and he knows that Hera and her crew will eventually lead him to them. So if he got rid of Hera now, he's going to lose his bridge to the rest of the rebel fleet, which is what he's trying to do in Zero Hour, is destroy all of Phoenix Cell. But Hera's just a tiny piece of Phoenix Cell, so he has to let her go because she's gonna be leaving the breadcrumbs that leads him to Zero Hour.
Yeah, but that's the thing is he's Mr. Smarty Pants, but he doesn't realize they're all learning from him. They all learn about him too. So it's just, and there's more of them, and he's Mr. Smarty Pants, but they're all, Hera's not gonna fall into a Thrawn trap as easily anymore, and knows here's this guy who's, who now she knows that she's got Sherlock Holmes after or whatever. So, I don't think he meant to do that. I don't believe that he meant to do that. Just like I didn't believe Pee Wee Herman in Pee Wee's Big Adventure when he crashed his bike and stood up and said, "I meant to do that." Do not. I think he covered, just like going, "Aha, don't worry, I'm playing three-dimensional chess." And a lot of times he is playing three-dimensional chess, but that just allows him to call three-dimensional chess on everything. Play the three-dimensional chess card.
The chess card. I think it's a win-win either way, though, because, if they hadn't exploded, because he was wanting to see how Hera responded, which was, the final piece that he didn't know how these rebels would respond. And so, if she didn't explode her house and they swapped out Sham and Hera, then he would have had Sham Syndulla, which was the leader of the rebellion on Ryloth. So that would have been a win. But the fact that they got away, he got to see how desperate that she can be. And he's like, "Okay, I've learned that they will go to extreme measures to get away. Cool, I've learned that too." So to me, it's a win-win either way for him. He was either going to get Sham.
It's not a win as long as he's Hera's going off into the rebellion and stuff. Sham Syndulla is going to be a thorn in his side still,
But Sham's not his problem. It's Slavin's problem.
That's
the thing. A victory to him is gaining more information because, again, he doesn't just want the ghost and the ghost crew. He wants the entire fleet. And she's, their group is, leaving the breadcrumbs to take him to the fleet, which we see in Zero Hour. The only reason that Thrawn loses in Zero Hour and doesn't kill them all is because of Bindu. Because Bindu stepped in and was like, "Fuck everything." And, that's the only reason Thrawn loses. He can't predict a Bindu. He had them all captured.
Right, right. Well, that's the running gag with all the Thrawn before this, too, is he was just sort of thwarted by things happening that were force oriented because it doesn't figure into he can't figure in the force, the workings of the force, because he doesn't understand the workings of the force. Maybe if he went and hung out in the whatchamacallit arc back in Clone Wars, he could have used some of that Dungeons and Dragons art to figure out the force.
Can you imagine Thrawn on Mortis? I think his brain would snap in half.
He would be in hog heaven of artwork to you figure out that, or just Thrawn in a temple, Jedi temple, like, or a Sith temple.
I think Thrawn's brain would break though if he met the Mortis gods and he'd be like, "What the fuck? My brain does not compute any of this. Oh god." So yeah. We're gonna fight about Thrawn all season. I feel it for the rest of the show.
I don't know. I don't know if I feel strongly enough, badly against him to fight over it. But
yeah,
I'll try. I'll see. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah,
but that's all I got.
Yeah, because I disagree. Like I think this is like very much in his everything. So I disagree. Good point.
I would have if I was writing Thrawn by this point, like. Within one episode or two of this, I would have had, like, I don't know if in Rebels, you know, having him actually kill somebody, you know, take out somebody from the Ghost crew would be a good idea, but maybe capture somebody and they're locked up for the rest of the season, you know, mm-hmm. or something like that, or, you know, setting them up really bad, you know, putting them in just a, like, I would have them, like, I would have made him just as threatening as Vader was, not in as direct a visceral way, but I would have been just like, oh geez, you know, this guy isn't messing around, but he's also he's sort of on the level of the Inquisitors of not messing around. Like, oh geez, this is a big pain in the ass to have this guy after us.
I guess I disagree, because we saw that this episode, like, this is the most trouble that the Rebels have had yet. Like, they were outsmarted at every turn, and the only reason they got away is because they chopper blew shit up. But
he's part of their crew because they beat him. formed a plan, and they foiled his plan.
I guess I just disagree, because I think that he was, like, I saw it as actively in this episode that this is the most trouble that they've had so far.
I'll prepare some charts.
Well, did you have any other notes?
No.
All right. Well, for my notes, I wish we hadn't talked about the trailer at the beginning, because I have like a long note that you can't see. I'm sorry. My first note is, I noticed for the first time ever that after they stun Ezra, in the next scene when they go into the closet, they make Hera drag Ezra's body. I never noticed that, because I always was like, oh, sure, like a stormtrooper is throwing Ezra in there. But like, when the door opens, they make Hera drag his ass, and I was like, oh god. I'm gonna get on my short notes out of the way. Chiss hiss. I love the scene where Thrawn grabs Slaven. He growls at him, and then he slowly lets him go and brush him off. But as, like, when he grabs Slaven, he goes, and, like, that's a chiss hiss. And it's just, ugh, that's my sexuality. And, like, chiss hisses were first brought to my attention when I first came into the Thrawn fandom. And apparently it's mostly an outbound flight. But, like, there are scenes that when Thrawn's brother Thras disagrees with people, it says that Thras hisses. And there are scenes where young Thrawn hisses at people that he disapproves of, too. And so the fact that we got, like, a little chiss hiss where he grabs Slaven and he goes, I was like, oh, the chiss hiss. Yay, chiss hisses. This is a good episode to show how Hera has affected everyone else. This is a personal mission for her. But the thing is, like, she does so much for everybody else. Like, she was trying to find Ezra's parents. She's been there for Sabine. She's helped out Zeb. Like, she does everything. And I love showing how she's impacted everyone else so much that they are more than willing to help her out on a personal mission. So it just says a lot about Hera's character that, like, yeah, Ezra puts it straight out, like, you always do everything for everybody else. Like, why wouldn't we help you? And it also just shows how selfless Hera is. Like, she doesn't think for herself. Like, she was going to go in here all by herself before everyone else volunteered. So I think it also says a lot about Hera that, like, she's more selfless, that she doesn't realize how blindly selfless it is, too. I see you clicking on that link. So, my next note is, Hera says that her home is with her crew and her family reminded me, and her, like, her family and stuff like that. It just reminded me of something my mom always says. My mom always told me that a house is a building, but the home is the people in it. So I like that scene just because it reminded me of my mommy. Also, Kanan force pushing the rocket into the walker is one of the coolest Kanan moments of all of Star Wars Rebels. I guess that's
why they waited till having him take it out again so they could do the cool part at the end. But I thought tactically he could have done it earlier.
I actually remember that scene the first time I saw the season 3 trailer. Like, I remember watching that scene of Kanan throwing the rocket into the walker in the trailer, and I was just like, whoa! And I watched it over and over and over again. So when it actually happened in the episode, the first time I watched this episode, I was like, he did the thing from the trailer. It's one of my favorite Kanan scenes because, like, he's blind. You're not expecting him to throw a fucking rocket into a walker. It's so cool.
We are from now on.
Yeah, I know, right? So my last note, which is my big note of this, there's a lot to say about Thrawn taking art, about imperialism, about colonialism, and how it plays in Rebels. And there's a lot of this written about by people who are much smarter than me. So I just wanted to pull from a little essay that I've actually been sitting on this essay since about mid Clone Wars. I've been sitting on this essay for us to get to this point. Because I just thought this was such a compelling essay. And I just wanted to read some of it because it does pertain to this episode, but, like, there's a lot of, like, great written pieces about how Thrawn taking art and what it says about imperialism and colonialism. So this is from Tumblr. It's by, I'm so sorry, Irian Aristar on Tumblr. I'll put a link in the show notes. So this little mini essay is called On Thrawn and Art. The thing about Thrawn, and particularly addressed in Zahn's novels, is he doesn't just take over worlds. He robs them of art, too. Not that his character is any less complex and interesting because of this, but it shows a very specific facet of Imperial ideals. It's been portrayed in the novels that when Thrawn orders an orbital bombardment of a planet, he leaves out one area, the culture and arts district. And then even as a planet's surface is being decimated, he sends a special retrieval squad to the largest art museums and takes all the art there back to the Chimera, where he keeps them for himself, like he did with Hera's Kalachori. The thing is, Thrawn is all about insight. He reads into the mindset of whole cultures using this method, but in the end, he has stolen this art simply as a tool to extend his power. And in doing so, he has an incomplete view of it. Think about it. If you wanted to know more about a piece of art, you could acquire it, hang it on your wall, and examine it, and you could draw some perfectly right conclusions about the meaning of that piece of art. But it wouldn't be the same as speaking to the artist, learning more about culture, and sharing the artist's joys in creating the art. All you would be doing if you stole art from a culture you were unfamiliar with would be taking this art and applying your own and only your own viewpoint to it. So when Thrawn tells Ezra, and this is dealing with the finale, when Thrawn tells Ezra that the Jedi had power but did not know how to wield it, Ezra replies, "The Force isn't a weapon, but you'll never understand that." And then Ezra says, "You can take whatever you want. Things you didn't make, didn't earn. Things you didn't even understand. You don't deserve to have this art or Lothal." So I'm going to sidetrack a little into something I experienced as a Chinese girl from Hong Kong when visiting the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. It's wonderful. It's my favorite museum in London, and I have a British passport, so I'm technically British myself. But every now and then, you see an exhibit that punches you right in the gut. Take the beautiful 30-foot-tall door brackets that once belonged to a mosque in the Middle East. They were lovely, so I looked underneath the description to see who had loaned them or how they were brought in. and there was nothing, because they were taken, not bought or given. British troops, at some point in history, had walked up to a mosque and ripped the door brackets out of it and then shipped them back to London. And then there's the Emperor's throne from China, placed there for all to see. Countless pottery and paintings, and that hurt even more. That is the essence of imperialism, and what the Galactic Empire does, too, in Star Wars. I'm so glad that they put a bit of that conversation with Ezra and Thrawn into the finale. Star Wars is about self-sacrifice, empathy, and hope. So despite his hidden agenda, Thrawn's attitude towards art is an extension of what the Imperial mindset is, to take without striving to understand. Just another thing that makes the characterization and thematic components of Star Wars Rebels so utterly compelling. And, okay, so that's the end of it. And I've read a lot of things talking about Thrawn's kind of colonialism mindset, which has always interested me with him being an outsider coming into the Empire. Because to me, so much of what Thrawn's character is, especially once we got the 2015 novel, so much of it is him trying to figure out, like, how the Empire works, and he uses the art to learn more about this side of the Empire. But he never fully grasps, like, a full understanding of it, because there is a lot of colonialism aspects to the Empire. They go to these planets like Ryloth, and they just completely, like, British it. Like, they just go in, and they just take it over, and they pretty much just erase history to make it all Imperial, which is so much of what Palpatine does. Like, he got out of his way, like, the individualism of the Republic, which was just made up of all these different individuals, and he made it just a blanket empire to kind of just, I'm saying whitewash, but I don't mean whitewashing in the way of, like, making it all white. I mean whitewashing, like, covering it in, like, white paint and, like, making it all one thing, like, making it all one his thing. So I just find that really interesting that that's pretty much what Thrawn does with art. Like, yeah, he has Hera's Kalkori, and he knows it's an important piece, but he'll never fully understand it. And that's what colonialism is. Like, he just takes this thing from a culture, and he's like, this is cool, and I'm going to learn all about it. But he'll never, like, fully understand it. And yeah,
he's got that sociopath. I think his culture is kind of, they're sort of like the evil version of Vulcans, it seems to me, you know, that he's not, you know, not completely emotionless, but having their emotions under super tight rein and using logic and analysis, which means you're going to miss things like the Force, you know,
yeah.
and the subtleties that in the art, which, you know, because which makes him flawed, which makes him a, you know, that's a good thing. But yeah, I just wish, like, his flaws are, like, too apparent to me. Like, they could have made him a little scarier before having his flaws seem to defeat him every time, and I would have rather had his flaws defeat him in the end, I guess.
Yeah, but I just found that, like, a very interesting thing about, like, how colonialism is being portrayed in Star Wars. So, yeah, thanks for bearing with me on that one. So, but that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
I'm ready to score it up.
Score this puppy up, Chris.
I thought it was a good, solid episode. You know, I mean, I gripe about Thrawn a little bit, but that's just sort of what I don't think he was. He was definitely better in this episode than he was in the last one.
And you're not a Thrawn fan, so.
Yeah, yeah. But it was just generally a solid episode, I thought. I gave it an 8.0.
Well, for me, I love this episode. It's actually one of my favorite episodes of Rebels. Hera's just really great the entire way through. Slavin's an idiot, but I love that he's an idiot. We get some chopper feelings. We get chiss hisses. We get Thrawn rage, and I love Thrawn in this episode. Like, this is a perfect introduction to him as a character, and he's beautiful, and I love him. But we also get the setup for the rest of the series of Hera versus Thrawn, and this is just one of my personal favorite episodes, so I give an 8.5 out of 10. So
I thought you'd even be higher than that, but
you know, cool. I wanted to give a little bit. I don't remember. There's parts of this season that I've only seen once.
So you want to give it a little leeway? You can still. I mean, you can still pop this no matter what the score is. You can pop it anywhere in your top five.
I can almost promise you this is going to be my top five. But there's parts of the season I don't remember very well. So I just wanted to give myself some wiggle room.
Yeah. I understand.
And I was started that I was thinking about some of the nines that I have in season two. Like, this is not Shroud of Darkness. This is not Honorable Ones. Like, this right. is not in that threshold.
Right.
It's close. I agree. Yeah, I mean, they're close, but it's not. So, Shroud of Darkness and Honorable Ones is hard to top, so. Well, as always, we'd love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Facebook page for our animation panel at DragonCon. So this was the episode where I was on the animation panel at DragonCon. So.
All right. So we've got one from Gene Hendrick. Well, this is sort of a, it looks like this looks like a little dialogue from, is this from Twitter or from
Facebook?
Or is it two different ones?
This is two different ones. So, see the big
comment from Gene and then a little dialogue between Gene and Hope. So Gene says, I could almost hear Hope's teeth grinding any time the Mortis arc was mentioned, especially with the idea of turning it into a series.
I was. That was true, Gene. I had a moment where I was like, when everyone's like, I love the Mortis arc, I was like, don't say anything. I had that moment in my head. So you're right. You're right. You're right.
All right, so now we get to the little back and forth of Gene and Hope. Gene says, and speaking of blue-collar Star Wars, have you ever seen / read anything about X-Wing Alliance, Hope? It's a 20-year-old, yikes, video game where the main character's family are, essentially, space truckers. And then Hope said, I haven't heard of this yet. And Gene said, it's a great game. I played it quite a bit in grad school.
So, Gene, I was looking into it a little bit more. It does look very interesting, but yeah, I hadn't even heard of it, and I've never played it, but it looked very interesting. So, thank you, Gene. I'll take a look at it. Candy!
It's candy time.
It's candy time! I'll close my eyes.
How are you feeling today? Big candy, little candy? We got all the extremes. We got in-between candies.
I just pulled out a big, like, para. It's huge. It's a big old, like, brown and yellow
pen. Oh, yeah. It's big, but it's fluffy like a pillow.
All right. So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he is a weirdo. And so our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review. Dario is Chris's, I feel like I'm just going through the motions right now. Dario is Chris's co-podcaster from Eat It and Beat It. I'm sorry, I was just kind of like, I want to eat candy. And the Para Bar is from Jordan. I think this is our first one from Jordan. Okay, okay. It looks like a big, like, kind of like chocolate-covered banana thing.
Holy cow, it's humongous. I thought it was two pieces, but it's just one giant chocolate-covered.
I just dropped part of it.
Mm. Cool.
Oh my gosh, it's kind of, oh my god, yeah.
Oh.
Oh my god, it's like a chocolate-covered spring cake.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay, so, there's
a little
cream
bit
in the
of
middle.
Ding-dong in there, too.
Yeah, there's that cream in the middle, and then cake around that, and then covered in chocolate. Holy cow. It's just a chocolate-covered vanilla cake, but it's huge and delicious. This is only 50 cents for all of this?
I know.
Man, American capitalism sucks. This would be like $1.50 in America.
At least.
I know.
Some of the candy bars are like $1.99 and up. It's at some of the places for the fancy stuff.
Sucks. Holy shit. Mm. This is delicious, Dario. Thank you so much.
It is. It's vaguely fruity, too, in a strange way.
Yeah, almost. I've noticed that. Like, someone, like, chocolate from like Europe and stuff like that, and it has that kind of almost a kind of fruitiness to their chocolate. All right,
that's because they're fruity.
Wow, this is well past the expiration date though. We're supposed to eat this back in March.
I don't believe in those. Yeah,
a sponge vanilla cake coated with flavored chocolate filled with vanilla cream. Good job, Jordan. This is delicious. I don't even want to know how many calories this is. Just the person
trying to... 50 million.
240 calories! Jesus.
Yeah. My brain uses that just podcasting for an hour.
My belly does not. Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else?
No.
Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website.
where we keep all our podcasts, where they all come out. And you can either listen, you can click on them and listen to them there. You can subscribe to our RSS feeds if you have the equipment to do that. Or you can go to iTunes and subscribe to us. You can check out all our doings on Facebook if you're on Facebook, which you probably are, at Two True Freaks Podcast on Facebook. We've got the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can go and post up stuff and chit-chat. We also on Twitter, and our Twitter feed is, of course, called Two True Freaks, and it's run by the legendary and aforementioned in the mailbag here, Gene, the podcasting machine. Wow, that was like kind of like a creepy Betty Boop.
I mean, it's Halloween week for us.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
We've been, what, like 3 days, so.
But that's it. Where can they find you, Hope?
Come play with us, Gene. Come listen to our podcast, Gene.
All work and no play makes Gene a dull boy.
All work and no play makes Gene a dough boy.
I think I just said a dough boy.
A dough boy.
Woohoo! You can find me at JGuys and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Monax on Twitter. I have my own website called geekygirlexperience.com, where lately I've been writing a lot of Resistance posts because Star Wars Resistance is running right now. And you can also find me at Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia, where I write fan fiction, including a Thrawn fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. I have a side project called The Lucky Lefty, which you can also hear here on the show because I have the first two chapters up on our show as a podfic, and I need to work on something to do. So, yeah, I'm excited for next week. Do you know why?
Why, Hope? Why?
We're going back to the Clone Wars.
Ooh, oh, yes, I remember that episode.
Yeah, Rex versus Battle Droids, Roger, Roger, bitches.
I might have to pull up an old ending to this show for that episode.
Actually, fun note, they used the Clone Wars music in the exit.
I know, I remember. I remember it playing, and it was playing, and then I was just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Because really it's cool. So familiar to me, because I was using it at the end of our Clone Wars, because this show was still on Clone Wars at the time, so I was listening to that music at the end of every, not only at the end of every Clone Wars episode, but the end of every JGuys and Jedis episode. So it just was like the natural music. It sounded natural at the end of it, and then I was like, hey, come on. I see what they did there, but we'll get to that next week.
Roger, Roger. See you then. That's a good place to go out on.
I think so.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Mm-hmm.